The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to Mark. Six days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes were dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah and Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with them anymore, but only Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, he ordered them to tell no one about what they had seen until after the Son of Man had risen from the dead. The Gospel of the Lord. I'm afraid that intro may have left you open to disappointment. I'm not that exciting today. Maybe I should just stop now and leave with that. April 24th, last spring. I woke up early, particularly for me, at about 5:30 in the morning in a bunk room with five other snoring souls. Well, four other snoring souls. In a little town called Arans, France, in the Pyrenees. Arans has a permanent population of seven people. Seven people. It's a village of a house and a small hostel with wonderfully appointed bunk rooms, a rustic but lovely little kind of tavern-type bar restaurant, and magnificent scenery of a valley in the Pyrenees studded with sheep from the Basque shepherds that have been there for hundreds and hundreds of years. I woke up at 5:30, got up, and stuffed my backpack, which would become the practice of every morning for the next 35 days, on my way to Santiago, Spain. Went downstairs, had a wonderful breakfast of fresh French bread, homemade jams, and local dried sausage. About perfect. Walked out to what I had known was a beautiful scene the day before, as I had arrived in the afternoon and was able to have dinner overlooking this valley, to the most incredibly solid bank of fog I think I've ever stood in my entire life. The only reason I knew which way to go was because there was both a path and I knew I was going up. So I began to walk and walk. Fog started to dissipate, only to give us a nice shower of rain, cold rain. Continuing to walk up and up, it actually turned into be the second steepest climb of the entire pilgrimage. Up and up, the rain became ice. And by the time I reached the top of the summit, it was an April blizzard, a late April blizzard. Now, I went to school in New Hampshire. I know what April blizzards look like, but it's not something that you really get used to, especially when you were not expecting it. I was there with a number of other people. As we arrived at the top, people were complaining about the weather, and I've got this stupid grin on my face. One, I like the cold. Two, I like to walk, and for God's sakes, I was in the middle of the Pyrenees, crossing over from France to Spain. It could have been a tornado, and I would have been happy. As the fog cleared, the snow settled, I noticed at the very top of the peak that we had just walked up, which, in retrospect, wasn't terribly tall. It was good size, but Pyrenees aren't very high. There was, on a mound of rocks, a statue of the Virgin Mary that was probably about 3.5-4 feet tall that had been placed there over 100 years earlier by the Basque shepherds to look over their flock, to protect them from the weather, from the altitude, from the heights, from the cliffs. In fact, earlier that day, for those of us who had not yet begun the walk up, they actually closed the trail and made them go around the mountain because the snow had gotten so bad. And the next day, someone actually walked off a cliff and died on the same trail. But there stood the Virgin Mary, stalwart in her protection of the shepherds and their livelihood. And it dawned on me when I got up there that while it had been, you know, a decent climb, it had been straight up for all intents and purposes, felt like it at least, and the weather was atrocious. But I got thinking, this is where people for hundreds of years, day in and day out, have worked. The shepherds tending their sheep, the Basque shepherds who had been there, they think possibly for over 1,000 years. Well, like all mountaintop experiences, you can't stay there. No matter how bad you want to, started to walk down. That actually was the treacherous part because the snow started to melt and it was about a 2.5-mile mudslide down into Roncesvalles, France. In fact, again, the same day, there was a woman taken out by helicopter because she slipped, broke a leg, and couldn't get herself down off the mountain with any help other than the helicopter. These are all things I did not share with my wife until after I was home. I don't know if it's part of my childhood. I don't know if it's just part of my personal makeup or my experience, but I love the mountains. There's something about being on top of a mountain that I find unbelievably enriching, exciting, cleansing. I don't know if it's the views, if it's the altitude. You know, there's that moment when you're walking and all of a sudden you realize the trees are shorter than you are. And then all there is just lichen when you hit over the tree line up in the alpine level. There's just something about it that ever since I was a small child who used to climb a lot in the Adirondacks, I love it dearly. That mountaintop experience. That mountaintop experience. In Celtic spirituality, they have a thing called thin places. Thin places are those emotional, spiritual, and sometimes physical places where the veil between the holy and the secular, between the divine and the profane, is so thin, you can actually feel the presence of God. You can actually feel the presence of God. And for me, mountains are like that. So is the beach. I don't know what that says. Maybe I'm bipolar or something. I like up and down. I don't know. Well, that might explain some things. But that place where the veil between us and the other becomes almost undiscernible. And this happens not just on mountaintops or beaches or beautiful places. It happens at moments. It happens at the moment when you hold a newborn child. Or a first love, a first experience. Those moments that just transcend the everyday. There's just something about them. There's just something about them. Well, this was kind of what happened to our friends Peter, James, and John. In a longer version than Mark provides us with, we get the sense of Jesus needing a break, needing a respite from this hurried life that he'd been leading of healing and teaching and feeding and preaching and, you know, exercising demons and, you know, just, I mean, it was just this whirlwind of activity that Jesus and his buddies were up to. And whenever Jesus seems to need to recharge, He almost always, in the scriptures, goes away. He separates himself from the craziness that is around him, frequently to a higher place. kind of that mountaintop experience. Well, he must have been sensing the fact that Peter, James, and John could use a break as well, and so he asked them to come with him. And again, in a longer version that Luke provides for us, we get this wonderful image of Jesus, you know, steadily walking up the mountain. And the three of them behind him scurrying to keep up and complaining about what a hard walk it is. And finally, when they get to the top, Jesus goes off by himself a little bit to pray. And Peter, James, and John immediately take the opportunity to do what? Nap. It's awesome. They go up there immediately and just fall right asleep. They were tired. They were tired before they started the climb, nevertheless after. And they awake to this amazing sight. Jesus, their teacher, their friend, their rabbi, they're starting to understand is something greater than all of that. Standing with him are Elijah and Moses. These are the superheroes of their childhood. The giver of the law and the greatest of prophets. They would have known instantaneously upon seeing them exactly who these two guys were. And it just confirms everything they've become to think and to know and to believe about who Jesus is. This dude keeps really solid company. Peter being Peter, not knowing what to do with himself as usual, but needing to speak, says, "Let's build three little shrines. That will be awesome." In fact, he must have been an Episcopalian. "Let's put a plaque up. Right here on the mountaintop. It'll be great. Everybody will remember how wonderful we are." And you can just see, it's another one of those Peter and Jesus moments where Jesus is just like... But in this version, he doesn't rebuke him. He just kind of ignores it, basically, which is sometimes the best way to handle situations like this. And they go down off the mountain. Because the problem is with mountaintop experiences are... you want to savor them. You never want to leave them, but you can't stay there. They aren't mountaintop experiences if you live on the top of the mountain. They're home. You got to go. You got to come down. Now, whether we're talking literal physical mountaintop experiences or we're talking spiritual kind of experiential things that are that kind of experience, excuse for the poorly putting it that way, we all have them. What's interesting about them is frequently they're dark places. It's not always the birth of a new baby. It's not always the peak of a summit that you've struggled to get to the top of. Sometimes they're those dark moments of doubt. Paul in 1 Corinthians talks about that veil disappearing upon death. Anybody who's ever had the privilege of sitting with somebody as they've died knows what that feels like, where that veil is just wafer thin. You know, I was thinking earlier about those kind of moments of doubt. Those moments of doubt that we have in our lives. To give another one from a parenting metaphor, I apologize for all the parenting metaphors. It's that first day of school for your kid. You know, sometimes the child is apprehensive. Sometimes the child is beyond excited. But the parent, usually the mother, is like, can't let go. Now, by the time you have your third child, you're like, out! But it's those holy moments in life which very often are not necessarily ones filled with joy, but they can be filled with sorrow. They can be filled with darkness. But yet, again, that veil between the holy and the secular, the sacred and the profane, is so thin. In Muhammad's writings, in his own personal writings, he talks about receiving the Quran. And at first, his first thought is, how could God entrust humble me, simple me, with such a charge? And his very first thought is he's actually been possessed. He thinks he's possessed by a jinn, which is like a desert angel. It's what we translate as genies. And then I guess God does a little bit of work on him, and he becomes more comfortable with the idea that he's been entrusted with this. But his entire life he struggles with this sense of doubt and worthiness. In fact, it's interesting because in extreme Islam, the conversation of Muhammad's doubt is anathema to talk about. It's not allowed in conversation. But it was a major part of who he was. And late in his life, he says it's the foundation of his faith, of who he is as a believer. Doubt allowed him to become faithful. That's what these mountaintop experiences can be like in our lives. Sometimes they can just shake us with awe. And other times they can humble us with doubt. But the incarnation tells us that it is at those precise moments when, if we allow ourselves to be vulnerable, we are most available to the divine. It is when we find ourselves most vulnerable, when we realize we can't do this thing, whatever this thing is that we're doing, we can't do it alone, that we become the most available and open to God if we allow it to be. May 4th is when I leave. May 8th is when I get started. On May 8th, I'm going to begin a 5-day climb through the Andes to Machu Picchu. And at one point, on the second day, in fact, we will hit, God willing and my lungs surviving, 16,000 feet. That is the highest I will have ever been, other than in an airplane. And apropos to the situation, it's called Dead Woman's Pass. Just makes you all warm and fuzzy, doesn't it? But it's a sacred place. It's been a sacred place for the Aztec people since the beginning of their time. It's a wonderful metaphor for thin places where the air is so thin too. And I got to tell you, I'm really looking forward to it. I had originally signed up for one trek and decided I wanted to do something harder. Stupid. But it's going to give me this opportunity to push myself to a place I've never been. Physically, probably emotionally, and maybe even spiritually. I want to see, I want to experience that place that has been a thin place for thousands of years. The thing about it is, you don't have to go chasing these experiences. I happen to like to, but you don't. They happen every day. Throughout our daily life, whether it be at work or school or home with the kids or, you know, in the doctor's office, it doesn't matter. It's those moments of vulnerability, physical, spiritual, those moments of vulnerability when, if we are willing to let God in, God is most present. Well, Jesus didn't let Peter build his shrines, no matter how bad he wanted to. As far as I know, he didn't even get to put up a plaque. They came down the mountain, and they actually started one of the hardest parts of, well, probably the hardest part of their journey together. That thing that we now call Holy Week. But as it got darker and darker and darker and darker for those around Jesus, in the end, they experienced the resurrection. Amen.